323-0137, the people of the state of Illinois, appellee by Adam Trejo versus Jordan Henry, appellant by Emily Brandon.
Ms. Brandon, you may proceed.
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Emily Brandon, and I'm an assistant appellate defender with the State Appellate Defender's Office, representing Jordan Henry in this matter. While there are two issues raised in our brief, I'm going to be focusing my argument today on the first issue regarding Will County being the improper venue in which to try crimes which were committed entirely in Cook County. However, before I get into my argument, I want to give a brief recitation of the facts. On February 23rd, 2022, Tori Kostich was sitting in his car in the parking lot of a 7-Eleven in Chicago when Jordan Henry approached him and ordered him out of his car, allegedly at gunpoint. Mr. Kostich immediately complied, walking to a nearby mattress store where he called the police. Mr. Henry thereafter left the 7-Eleven in his own car, but with Mr. Kostich's cell phone, which Kostich had left behind when he was ordered out of the car. About 30 minutes after the incident with Kostich, and still in the city of Chicago, Mr. Henry approached Uber driver Gollum Scott, who was parked and waiting for a customer. Henry ordered Mr. Scott out of the car, again allegedly at gunpoint, and Mr. Scott complied, and Mr. Henry drove off with Mr. Scott's Volkswagen Jetta. About an hour after the incident with Mr. Scott, an Illinois State police trooper spotted the stolen Jetta traveling southbound on I-94 in Chicago. The police chased the Jetta through the Chicago Area Expressway system until the Jetta crashed along I-55 in Will County. Mr. Henry fled from the crashed Jetta and was quickly apprehended. The cell phone that Mr. Henry took from Tori Kostich was later found in the Jetta. And although it was alleged that Mr. Henry used a gun to force Kostich and Scott out of their cars, no gun was ever recovered. Mr. Henry was then tried and convicted in Will County. In regards to the incident against Mr. Kostich, Mr. Henry was convicted of attempted aggravated vehicular hijacking, armed robbery regarding Mr. Kostich's cell phone, and the theft of the cell phone. In regards to the incident against Mr. Scott, Mr. Henry was convicted of aggravated vehicular hijacking and theft of Mr. Scott's car. In addition, Mr. Henry was convicted of unlawful possession of a weapon by a felon based on his alleged use of a firearm in the incidents against Mr. Kostich and Mr. Scott. Now, to put my argument in the simplest of terms, Jordan Henry was tried for these offenses in the wrong county. The venue rules in Illinois are governed both by the Illinois Constitution and the venue statute, 720 ILCS 5/1-6. Generally speaking, criminal actions are required to be tried in the county where the offense was committed, but various provisions of the venue statute address crimes that the legislature has determined can be committed in more than one county. Subsection G covers the offense of theft and provides that for the purposes of prosecuting theft, venue is proper in any county in which the accused exerted control over the stolen property. Here, the state argued and the trial court agreed that this provision automatically attaches to every crime for which theft is a lesser included offense, including as relevant here, armed robbery and aggravated vehicular hijacking. But this goes against both the plain language of the venue statute and Illinois Supreme Court precedent. First, subsection G refers only to the offense of theft. There is no language in that subsection that indicates the legislature intended for it to automatically apply to every offense for which theft is a lesser included. Indeed, in the Illinois Supreme Court's decision in People v. Gilliam, it makes clear that theft being a lesser included to robbery is irrelevant in determining whether the proper venue in which to prosecute a robbery lies in more than one county. The question is ultimately whether the robbery continued into more than one county. In Gilliam, the defendant committed an armed robbery in Chicago and locked the victim in the trunk of her car, and then traveled with the victim in her trunk to another county where he was later prosecuted. The defendant argued that the county where he was prosecuted was not the proper venue because the robbery against the victim was completed in Cook County when he took control of the victim's car by force. The Illinois Supreme Court recognized that the robbery was technically completed in Chicago, but found that it continued into the second county because the force against the victim never ceased. Gilliam makes clear
Did they say it was technically completed?
The Illinois Supreme Court, yes, did agree that the robbery was completed in the city of Chicago when he took...
But that the force is an element of robbery, isn't it?
Yes, and he took control of the car by force in Chicago.
But it was, the offense was ongoing. That was the point that Justice Holder just making it guilty.
Yes, the offense was ongoing because the force against the victim never ceased. It continued
right.
into the second county, and that didn't happen.
So would one conclude that the robbery was ongoing?
Yeah, it continued. I would agree with that, yes.
Okay, so the Supreme Court misstated?
No, I'm just, for that language, they agreed that the robbery was technically completed in the city of Chicago when completed, but then continued, if that makes sense.
It makes no sense.
It makes no sense?
But it is in the case.
It is in the, yes. That, so the two elements that comprise robbery, the taking and
the... Well, the element is the continued force.
The continued force is what is important, right?
And it's ongoing.
Right.
Yes.
And here, that is not the case. The force against the victim ceased in the city of Chicago. Neither of the victims traveled with Mr. Henry into Will County. Therefore, the robbery did not continue into Will County as it did in Gilligan when the victim was stuffed in the trunk of her car. The force against the victim there continued on into the second county. That didn't happen here. After the, again, the use of force ended against both of the victims in the city of Chicago. After their respective encounters with Mr. Henry, they remained in Chicago where they spoke to Chicago police officers, again, about the crimes that happened to them in the city of Chicago.
But the attempted theft and the theft of the second victim, what about that? That hasn't ended.
Against the, yes.
The attempted has, right?
But against the... The second, are you talking about the second carjacking?
Yes.
Yes. That ceased in the city of Chicago when he took the victim's car and drove off in it. The force against the victim ceased as soon as he took the car and drove off. The force against the victim did not continue into Will County.
So, okay, you're talking about robbery now.
And the attempted vehicular hijacking. Robbery and vehicular hijacking are essentially the same offenses.
Correct.
Robbery includes the taking of property that is not a vehicle, and through the use of...
Why would they distinguish vehicular hijacking from just general robbery?
You would have to ask the legislature that question.
Okay.
But
they're treated the same.
They are absolutely treated the same. And so again, the force used to take the victim's cell phone, to take the victim, the second victim's car, those... All of that ceased in the city of Chicago. None of that continued on into Will County. And again, because neither the armed robbery against Coppedge or the aggravated vehicular hijacking against Mr. Scott continued into Will County was not the proper venue in which to try Mr. Henry for these offenses. And the trial court erred in denying the motion to dismiss. The trial court also erred in denying the motion to dismiss with respect to the unlawful possession of a weapon by a felon charges and the attempt at aggravated vehicular hijacking charges. In regards to the unlawful possession of a weapon, the state presented no evidence that Mr. Henry ever possessed a gun in Will County. No gun was ever recovered from Mr. Henry's person and the vicinity where he was arrested, his belongings, or from the Jetta. And there is absolutely no evidence that Mr. Henry, if he indeed had a gun during the incidents in Chicago, which we do contest, if he indeed had a gun, there's no evidence that he ever brought that gun into Will County.
Well, I think we're going to say the same thing. The circumstantial argument, you're dismissing that completely?
Well, first of all, none of that was presented at the hearing on the motion to dismiss, where the state had the obligation to prove by a preponderance of the evidence that the crime was committed in Will County. Second of all, the circumstantial evidence, no, the police chose not to look for a gun. If he had indeed dropped a gun, the police could have found it.
Are we limited? We're not limited to the arguments at the motion to dismiss. We can also consider the evidence at trial, correct?
I would argue that because we are challenging the motion, the trial.
The venue argument,
right, where the trial court's denial of the motion to dismiss based on improper
venue. So you're saying we can't consider the testimony that he fiddled with his jacket and...
I would argue no, because the state did not present that at the hearing where they had the burden to prove that this crime was committed in Will County. They didn't do that here.
So this is not a rhetorical question. Are you saying that there's no case law suggesting that is there any case law saying we can't consider the facts of trial as it relates to the venue question on appeal?
First of all, venue doesn't have to be proven.
I'm aware.
No, I know.
But you preserved the issue. You raised it pre-trial. You had a trial. You raised it post-trial. Now you're in the appellate court. My question is there any case law about whether we can consider the facts of trial as to propriety of venue? You seem to be suggesting we're limited to the arguments made before trial, and I'm just not certain that's correct.
I'm not aware of any case law, Your Honor, but again, the error here that we're alleging is that the state didn't prove their burden at the hearing on the motion to dismiss.
Yeah, you're actually circumcising, or you're circumscribing that issue. So you're saying anything subsequent at trial in terms of evidence, which there was.
But
I mean, there was...
The state did not have to prove that the possession was in Will County at the trial. They only had to prove possession, correct? So that could have been the Will County evidence.
Yes, that is also true. So, and again, also, I think it's important to note that there was an hour in between when Mr. Henry took Mr. Scott's car and when he was spotted by the police, giving him ample time to dispose of a gun if he had one. The evidence, even if you do consider the trial evidence, the evidence is that he was reaching towards his pocket. He could have been pulling up his pants. That is ambiguous at best. And then, again, if the officer, one of the officers testified, I believe it was Officer Whitbeck, testified that if he had seen a suspect dropping something, that would have been investigated. And it wasn't. The officers here chose not to look for a weapon, and the state does not just get to say, well, maybe he had one. They have to prove it. So again, because there was no evidence that Mr. Henry committed the offense of unlawful possession of a weapon by a felon in Will County, the judge erred in denying the motion to dismiss with respect to this charge. Now, the state concedes that Will County was the improper venue to try to attempt aggravated vehicular hijacking charge, because no element of that offense was committed in Will County. But the state argues that the denial of the motion to dismiss was harmless error. The error here was not harmless, and by that I mean improper venue is not subject to harmless error analysis, which is reserved for trial errors, i.e. those occurred that during the presentation of the case to the jury. The trial court's denial of counsel's pretrial motion to dismiss for improper venue wasn't an error that occurred during the presentation of the case to the jury. It was not a trial error. It was a pretrial error that affected the structure of Mr. Henry's trial and is therefore akin to structural error. The United States Supreme Court in Weaver v. Massachusetts outlined various rationales that support finding an error is structural, including, as relevant here, the right at issue isn't designed to protect the defendant from erroneous conviction, but instead protect some other interest. And two, the effects of the error are too hard to measure. First, a defendant's right to be prosecuted in the county where he committed the offense is designed in part to protect the defendant against prosecutorial forum shopping. And it also serves to protect the defendant from the unfairness and hardship of being prosecuted in a remote place. So those are both errors that are different from...
Now, who is that from that Massachusetts case you're citing?
Weaver v. Massachusetts, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. And then again, the effects of this error are too hard to measure. It's really impossible to know what might have been if Mr. Henry had been tried in Cook County rather than Will County. As one of the officers testified when Mr. Henry was arrested, he told Mr. Henry, you're in Will County, it's going to be a totally different situation than Cook County. And again, we really don't know the effects of this error. Just to note, Cook County's racial demographics are markedly different from Will County. Cook County has nearly doubled by percentage the amount of Black residents, meaning that a Cook County jury would have been significantly more likely to contain people like Henry who are Black. And Cook County prosecutors also might have offered Mr. Henry a more generous plea deal than what Will County prosecutors were willing to offer. But again, even these are speculative, demonstrating that the precise effects of this error are difficult to ascertain.
And the focus of it doesn't need to be just on the trial. You're saying negotiations can also be part of the structural error argument?
Well, and that's just an example as to why the effects of this error of being tried in the wrong county are a little bit difficult to measure. It's just an example, a demonstrative example of that we don't know what Cook County prosecutors might have. We don't know how things would have played out differently if this case had been tried as it should have been in Cook County.
But was, other than the fact that you're arguing it should have been tried in a different county, what was different about the trial?
First of all, he chose to do a bench trial, which he may or may not, he may have done, knowing that a Will County juror or jury might have been more conservative, more white, less likely to contain people that looked like him. He may have chosen to do a bench trial because of that. But again, these effects are difficult to ascertain, and that's why this is more akin to structural error and isn't harmless.
So it's structural error as to which offenses?
As to the ones that were tried in the wrong county. So that would be the, yes, there are 13 offenses. There's 11 offenses. So that would be the aggravated vehicular hijacking against Mr. Scott, the attempted aggravated vehicular hijacking against Mr. Kosich, and then the armed robbery charges.
Thank you.
As well as the unlawful possession of a weapon by a felon.
Where is this
account? It's
over there.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, red light.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Well, you're on.
Do you just want to make a summary conclusion?
Yes. In conclusion, the trial court erred in failing to dismiss the offenses we just talked about. None of these crimes were committed or continued into Will County, and Will County was not the proper venue. We respectfully request that this court reverse Mr. Henry's conviction for those offenses.
Any further questions from the bench?
No.
Thank you. You got time and reply.
Thank you.
Mr. Trejo?
Yes.
You may respond.
May it please the court, counsel, Adam Trejo on behalf of the people of the state of Illinois. Defendant will first like to address, the state would first like to address defendant's argument that it forfeited its response regarding count 11. Count 11 charged the defendant with the unlawful possession of a weapon by a felon. In the state's brief, it argued that the circumstantial evidence showed that he had a gun that he used to rob Goldman of his phone and also a toy of his phone and Goldman of his vehicle. Although there was an hour time lapse, the circumstantial evidence showed that after police tried to pull him over, he fled from Cook County to Will County. Police officers testified that they didn't see the defendant throw out anything out of the vehicle. And after he crashed the vehicle in Will County and fled, that police officers testified that they saw him remove his jacket and reach towards his waistband. Defendant argues on appeal that the state forfeited that argument, but that's not true. Although the state didn't emphasize that argument in at the hearing, it did raise it in its response to defendant's motion to dismiss. And the state would like to direct the appellate court to Common Law Record 62 through 63, where the state does raise that argument. And again, you don't have to, there's a lot of counts contested. So the emphasis at the hearing was counts 1 through 5. And that's what the state focused its argument on, but it just preserved that argument. The state will now address the defendant's argument in regards to counts 1 through 5, which charged the defendant with various counts of aggravated vehicular hijacking and armed robbery. The crux of defendant's argument really relies on People v. Gilliam to support his contention that structural error occurred in this case. But a review of the case shows that it doesn't support his position at all. As defendant argued in their opening remarks, in that case, aggravated robbery was completed in Cook County. However, the essence of robbery continued into a different county, Jefferson. And the essence of robbery, that Gilliam court stated, was use of force or threat of force. Defendant's interpretation of Gilliam has defendant's interpretation folded into its argument suggests that in order for the essence of robbery to be continued, the victim has to be attached to the property as the victim was in Gilliam, but that's not the case. That's not the holding. The essence of robbery must continue, and that's what happened here. After the defendant stole the first victim's cell phone and then robbed Goldman's vehicle, police officers proceeded to stop him in Cook County. And thereafter, he used force, and that's definitely the threat of force to maintain that property. He continued fleeing Cook County into Will County, putting the lives of other drivers at risk.
So you're suggesting that aggravated fleeing and looting is a use of force?
I'm focusing on the defendant's conduct. He used the vehicle in a reckless manner, and that supports in a reckless manner to flee the police and to evade detection. That's force. I think he reached up to speeds of 150 miles per hour. That is the use of force to maintain that property. So the essence of robbery continues.
So the force is really directed toward the property.
Exactly. It's not necessarily directed to the victim because these aren't crimes against the specific person. They're crimes against property. And so the analysis is focused on the acts the defendant did regarding the property, not necessarily.
Ultimately, you're focusing on the continued possession of the property, not the speed you're driving the property.
No, the state's focusing on his actions, which constitute use of force to maintain that property.
So if he was driving the speed limit in Will County, you would concede that you didn't have jurisdiction?
No, not necessarily, because he was still depriving.
So it is the continued possession of the vehicle.
That in conjunction with the manner he operated.
Well, I want to change the hypothetical. He's driving the speed limit. He's located in Will County. He pulls over when the MARS lights are activated.
Well,
is he still committing the offense of aggravated vehicular hijacking in Will County?
Yes, because he's continuing to maintain that property and he's not surrendering that property.
Right. So it's the continued possession of the property.
That's not the state's position. It's not, even though the force doesn't have to be extreme. You don't have to cause harm to, you don't have to actually cause harm to another person. It's just
ask you a question. If the facts were nothing other than he's found in possession of the vehicle in Will County, and it becomes clear that he drove straight from Cook to Will when he was observed and stopped, would he be guilty of aggravated vehicular hijacking in Will County?
Well, the issue isn't if he's guilty. Again,
Would venue be proper in Will County?
Exactly, because...
it's a yes or no question.
Yes, because the standard of review at a motion to dismiss regarding venue is the preponderance of the evidence. It's not beyond a reasonable doubt. But the state would like to emphasize that the trial court relied on Ankerman for its decision to deny defendant's motion to dismiss. And the defendant on appeal attacks Eggerman, although since 1997, there's been no case disagreeing with it. The manner in which the defendant attacks Eggerman on appeal, they're arguing that the court in Eggerman improperly used an analysis. An analysis stems from the following proposition, that venue is proper in any county where an element of the offense occurred. And Gilliam and Ankerman are very similar in that they apply the same analysis. Gilliam didn't explicitly state so, but they're focusing on whether one element was committed outside a different county. It's essentially the same analysis. However, the difference is which offense the court applied that analysis. In Gilliam, the court applied the analysis to the charged offense. In Ankerman, the court applied the analysis to a lesser included offense, and that is theft. And because the defendant possessed the stolen item in that county, venue was proper. And no court has disagreed with that analysis or reasoning. Pursuant to the doctrine of stare decisis, Eggerman controls. It's still good law. Theft was a lesser included offense of aggravated vehicular hijacking and robbery, which the defendant doesn't contest. And as long as the defendant exerted control over that property in Will County, venue was proper pursuant to Eggerman. The state would like to move on because it does concede count 6 and 7 that venue was improper regarding attempt vehicular hijacking in regards to the first victim, Tori Koch. Defendant argues that structural error is the appropriate analysis, and the state disagrees. The defendant doesn't cite any case standing for the proposition that error in not granting a motion to dismiss based on venue is structural error. The state actually cites a case, People v. Holmes, where the reviewing court applied a harmless error analysis in regards to the defendant arguing that the venue was not dismissed. So harmless error does apply in this case, and the state cites People v. Holmes for that proposition, which the court did apply it. And the analysis regarding harmless error, the state must prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the jury verdict would have been the same absent the error, and the state posits that it is because the evidence was overwhelming. He's not contesting on appeal identity. He's not contesting that he wasn't found in Will County fleeing after crashing the second victim's vehicle. This is totally within the realm of harmless error, and it is absolutely harmless. Does this court have any other questions?
Just to follow up on your last statement, there, would that also apply to the circumstantial evidence that was used on the possession, unlawful possession charge?
Yes, absolutely. Venue can be proven by circumstantial direct evidence. And of
no,
course,
the structural error argument, because that was a much closer call. I think you could see that.
In regards to which count?
The unlawful possession of a weapon by a felon.
Count 11?
I don't know why.
Okay, yeah, count 11, yes, the circumstantial evidence would apply to that count. Barring any further questions, the people of the state of Illinois respectfully request that this court affirm defendant's convictions.
No questions? No. Okay. Thank you, counsel.
Okay. Thank you.
Counsel, you may reply.
So in regards to counsel's argument that the driving erratically constituted the continuation of force, that just doesn't track with how robbery is conceived of. Robbery requires taking from the person or presence of another through the use of force or threat of force. That implies that the force has to continue against the victim. And again, that is what Gilliam makes clear, is that the force has to continue against the victim. The court emphasizes and traveling with the victim locked in the trunk of her car. So again, the force continuing against the victim is what allowed them to conclude that the robbery had continued into Jefferson County. And that just is not the case here. The force against both victims ceased in the city of Chicago and did not continue at all into Will County.
Absolutely. Go ahead. Eggerman.
Yes.
How do you get around it?
How do I get around it? Eggerman, the portion discussing the venue argument, it was wrong. Plain and simple, it was wrongly decided. They conflated and confused the venue rules and the rules for double jeopardy. And it relied upon a premise that they stated was, generally speaking, it was a general premise that venue is proper in any county in which any element of the offense is committed. But if you trace back the case law that they cited for that proposition, it traces back to a case that cites subsection M of the venue statute, which is applies only to inchoate offenses. And it's clear that this is not a general proposition, right? Because if it applied to all offenses, then there would be no reason for it to be specifically enumerated in the venue statute for inchoate offenses. It would automatically apply.
So your position is if the woman was not in the trunk of the car at Gilliam, that decision would have come out differently?
Correct. Correct.
What about the theft being a lesser included? How is that?
Theft being a lesser included is irrelevant for the purposes of determining the proper venue.
For the robbery.
For the robbery. The statute makes no mention of the theft provision applying to any offense for which theft is a lesser included.
But there is a theft provision.
There is a theft provision. Yes, we're not contesting that. It is in the statute. We can't contest it. But it does, again, theft being a lesser included of armed robbery, vehicular hijacking, is irrelevant when it comes to determining the proper venue for those offenses. For those offenses, again, here, Those offenses were committed entirely in the city of Chicago. They began in Chicago. They ended in Chicago. They did not continue into Will County, and therefore Will County was the improper venue in which to try those offenses.
Can you address, recap for us your position on harmless error?
On harmless error? Yes. This is not a trial error. It's one that affected the structure of the trial. It affected, again, the judge that Mr. Henry was seen in front of. It affected what counsel he had. And this is more akin to structural error because, again, here, the error is, the effects of this error are a little difficult to measure. As I stated, we don't know what could have been. We don't know for sure. The state says, oh, he would have been convicted in Cook County. We don't know that. That is pure speculation. We don't know what Cook County prosecutors, what kind of plea deal he would have been, they would have been willing to offer, which could have affected what offenses he ultimately was convicted of and sentenced for. We don't know these facts. And that, again, makes it more akin to structural error and not harmless error. And if Your Honors have any more questions, I'd be happy to answer, but if not.
No questions.
There was one case study about the state, Smallwood.
Yes.
And you address the analogy that they made between a sentencing enhancement using kind of the same arguments.
I argued in my reply that Smallwood is actually not in a posit to our position here. In both Smallwood and in Gillian, the force against the victim continued, and here it didn't. It's that simple. Our position is that simple.
Those questions? No further questions from the bench. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, both for your arguments in this matter this afternoon. It will be taken under advisement, this case, and a written disposition shall issue in due course.